Hey friends, thank you for tuning in to another episode of SMU Decoded. We appreciate you tuning in and listening. This is actually a pretty special episode. This is something that is linked to a very cool event performance that is coming up here in Tulsa in the next week or so, but is a cool concept that we wanted to memorialize in its own right. So while we are continuing to work on season 3 of SMU Decoded, we wanted to be sure and drop this just because you may not know that this is going on. So this special performance that I'm alluding to is something that Aaron has been collaborating with friend and local composer Dave Broome on, and our topic for today is going to be really anchored on AI and machine learning and music. So what you're about to hear is a conversation between me, Aaron, and Dave about this project, how it's bringing together tech and music in a live composition. We'll dive into the ethical place that AI has in our relationship with music and creative expression. If you're listening to this before March 9th of 2024, then be sure to check out this performance. It's gonna be happening March 9th, that's a Saturday, at Lowdown here in Tulsa. And there's lots of extra details online, and we do mic check this as well in the episode itself. So stay tuned and be sure to say hi, you know, if you end up coming to the event. And if not, we're still glad you're listening because this is a really cool topic and we're so excited to share and to be a part of it.
I definitely identify with being a nerd, there's no doubt about it, which is now cool. And it wasn't fun whenever you're isolated in your bulletin board system as an eighth grader, you know, dial-up modem being interrupted by call waiting. Just saying. Some people will actually understand what I just said, by the way. Not everyone on this call even. So Jess, there were these things called modems.
I'm not a modem. I'm not as young as you think.
You know, did you have dial-up?
Hell yeah, I had dial-up.
Really?
No.
Oh,
okay. Are you kidding?
My name's Dave. Hi. I'm a composer and pianist living here in Tulsa. I have an upcoming piece that I've been working with Aaron here to develop a technology that interprets what I play on the piano into text. So I've always had an interest in technology and music and kind of blending those things. Not always in like with an idea of what to do with it, but just to play around. And I see that as kind of a driving force of my creativity is to just, what happens when I twiddle with this thing? What happens when you put this concept with that concept? And the results are mixed. It's not always going to be gold, but you try out and then you explore and then you show humanity what you've found and they can judge and take what they see fit.
So Dave is one cool cat. And yes, that is foreshadowing and I'm not going to explain more. You'll just have to listen on. But I'm going to read a selection of items from the bio on his website, which I highly encourage you to check out, davidallenbroome.com. Dave's works have been appreciated across America, Australia, Russia, Europe. This is the best. He's been described in the New York Times as a deft and focused performer, as well as an artist who composes, and I quote, juicily atmospheric music. TheaterScene.net hailed his high smarts goofiness, and the AU review describes him as being soaked with unbelievable talent. We are so lucky to have a gem like that here in Tulsa. Dave leads the composition program at the Bart Center for Music here in Tulsa, where he focuses on integrating multimedia performance practices with tech and traditional music notation. Dave has completed degrees at the Manhattan School of Music and Towson University.
Kind of like what I see the purpose of writing music is to kind of be a really avant-garde, like that concept of you're the advance guard. You're going out into the field and saying, check this thing out, guys. And then maybe drag a few people over and they're like, oh yeah. And then they get the rest of the clan to come take a look, is that's kind of the metaphor that I see, a driving creative force.
That's probably the coolest description of that phrase, avant-garde, that I've ever heard.
Hands down.
Yeah. I think about it like in terms of the, you know, the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album has like icons of various sorts on the cover. And they have some like Stockhausen, Karlheinz Stockhausen is on there. And he was an avant-garde composer that they drew from. Definitely for songs like, well, it's not on Sgt. Pepper, I don't think, Revolution Number 9. But those, that kind of sampling electronic element was a big factor in their creation. But they were wildly popular, so they did it in their own kind of way. But, you know, hearkening back to, hey, guys, come check this out. What's this, you know, music like?
I think one thing that I like about that a lot is that just that again, that framing. Sometimes I think people use avant-garde, especially if they're not one of the few that comes out and goes like, oh, what is this? You know, as like, oh, that's not for me. That's just like a really out there. That's just very, it's almost untouchable, not accessible in any capacity. And I think there's like, you're forging new territory, but there's a bridge there too. There's a looking back and an invitation. I think that's the piece that I like about that too. So very cool. Yeah.
That's because Dave's cool like that. You know, some avant-garde composers are like, get the hell out. Don't come near me.
With that said, I don't find that this piece that we've been working on is particularly, it doesn't sound particularly out there, I don't think. I think it's pretty accessible music. It's just the concept was, you know, based in what happens if, you know, that's the spirit that's behind everything.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating, Dave, because I totally agree. Like, the end result is pretty accessible, right? Like, I've seen composers and performance artists do things that to the average person that isn't into that, sometimes seems pretty inaccessible. You know, just a room full of wires of different gauges that someone just throwing around, making noise against tin cans or something. And it's like, oh, okay, you know. And you can really, there's some part of any kind of art that's true to a sense, that's coming from the artist's truth. And that spectrum of inaccessibility or accessibility is, you know, it's a real thing. And when you watch or listen to this piece, I agree 100%, it's totally accessible. The implementation of it is the thing that's closer to inaccessible. Dave, how do you explain this beautiful project when you talk to other people? Because I find it's a bit difficult to just headline.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would, I've normally kind of kept it short. I've written a piece for string quartet and keyboards and voice and sign language interpreter that deals with how information is interpreted through those mediums.
And this is where we start to pick back the onion, because if you just walked up, you know, to the, you know, into Lowdown and saw, you know, you would see a singer, pianist, string quartet, you know, sign language interpreter. And that's not like super unique right there. There's sign language interpreters at musical performances, right? And you would see a really nice piece.
The sign language aspect of this piece is really that was part of the exploration. Like, what, and I just happened to be working on these gloves that are light sensitive, and using that and turn that into control voltage. And also there's a beautiful visual aspect to sign language that I think people recognize it. Like I'm in New York, they always had the sign language interpreter for every press conference. And it was wildly animated to the point that it was like scene stealing. And I was like, I want that.
You like have a competition at that point between the interpreter and other performers, because, and that's one of the themes I feel like to this composition is information transmission, translation, accessibility, interpretation. But, you know, we jumped down into the rabbit hole.
Right. Yeah. We got here for our list. Didn't give an overview. Sorry.
Dave, I've seen you perform. I've seen, you know, you working with the gloves. I've seen this interaction, the work that you and Aaron have done. And then this imagining that you're working on right now is like the deluxe version of all of that, you know, coming together. But I think what's so interesting is there's all these really, like, there are handoffs or these interventions too, where at certain points of connection throughout everybody and every tool or machine that's part of the process, there's like a shift and a change. So maybe build out the chain of like, what, where's the like instigating moment? Like, what does that look like? And then how does that reverberate throughout?
Do you mind, Dave, if I riff off that for a second?
Go for it.
Because what the structure that you're talking about just there is something that we see a lot in our work in data pipelines and in computer science. And it's a directed acyclic graph, like it's a tree, basically. It's got a root and then it goes into branches and it's linear in that sense. So I love that you picked that method. So Dave, I'm going to kick it to you to talk about the chain of events, but I want to start because I don't think that you would start here. I think that you're very humble when you talk about this, but I'm going to say that the chain of beautiful performance starts with your creativity.
Yeah. Just playing notes on, I play notes on a keyboard and that's what starts everything. So it sends the MIDI data, like pitch information, velocity, how hard you're hitting the keys, how fast are you playing, all of that gets analyzed. The first stage is into pure data, right? That's where it kind of goes. And then that program says, okay, this is happening, you know, and it's recognizing these moments. Then we put parameters on it that says, okay, if X amount of notes are happening in a certain pattern, you know, give it a ratio of like 0 to 1, you know, kind of how much is it doing that? How much is it not doing that? And so it's recognizing on a different level than just hearing other things that are happening, other patterns that are happening. Then that's when the kind of AI start of things kicks into play, where we give a prompt to generate an idea or a theme to text that it's going to send out. And it just keeps spitting out words as I keep playing them notes. So then those words get printed onto a screen where our eyeballs look at the screens and see these words go up. Or not we. I've sent it to the sign language interpreter and the singer. So then we've got sound coming from a human voice singing the words on the screen. And then you've got the sign language interpreter also doing the words, but she's wearing these gloves that are light sensitive. These movements, sensing light, turns that into control voltage, which I use with the modular synthesizer over here.
So modular synthesizers are electronic instruments that can look like anything from a keyboard with 40 different knobs that modulate sound to something close to a switchboard operator board from the 1950s. Synths, as you might know them, layer and process inputs, electrical currents, to produce new sounds. Cool, right?
So it's like I'm playing the notes and it's picking up certain notes, not others. And then the hands are saying, okay, do this particular thing to that sound. And I can really choose whatever I want it to do to the sound. But basically I've picked a lot of filters and attenuators that turn things on and off audibly.
And Aaron, we were talking about this last part, the piece that I was having trouble with that I imagine other listeners are probably going, no, wait, what? Or you think you have it. So Dave, you start notes on a keyboard. That gets ingested and turned into something machine readable. Then generative AI comes in, translates that into something that we would probably call lyrics. It's text based on all the different dimensions.
I just wanted to join in with that one.
Okay, so if you didn't catch that, that was Dave's cat, Toonses, contributing to the conversation. So forgive the interruption. Sorry, not sorry.
You just said notes on a keyboard.
Notes on a keyboard.
Dunes is the driving cat.
So generative AI comes in, picks up those notes, well, the machine readable version, right? Turns it into what we would consider, many people might consider lyrics. Annie is coming in. She's singing lyrics, interpreting and adding her own tonality and musicality, her own compositional element. I think you said compositional license, right? Then her singing is then interpreted and picked up by the sign language interpreter, right? Who is wearing these gloves that are working in a way that, this is the little mind bending part too, like influenced by light and movement, I think, right? Which then, okay, here's the part that gets confusing, is then influencing or gets intercepted by, or your music that you're playing intercepts what the output is from those gloves. Is that right?
It's kind of like if you think of it as a circle that it's going around in. And so you're almost at the very last stage to latch right together the circle. And it's that, once it's the light sensor, it's comes across as movement, and that turns the movement into sound, basically. So that's what's completing the puzzle, is that it starts with sound. It goes into text, then goes into sound, sung sound, then goes into movement, then goes back into sound. And it's got these different stages.
It's not cyclical influence, but there's every point, there's a connection. It's almost like, and this is grossly oversimplifying, right? But there's a bit of a game of telephone as each stage like then picks it up and interprets. But then there's also this, especially right there at the end, where the origin and how it's been interpreted then influences like the next round. And then it kind of seems like there's this really interesting spiral of influence too.
Yeah, like a feedback loop of sorts, information. Yeah.
Can we pedantically debate that? Because
this is Aaron's favorite pastime.
I know pedantic debates are my favorite pastime. Because we were talking, like Justin, when I was talking to her about this, she was like, it's like a loop. And I was like, it's not a loop. Right. But now you're saying, Dave, it's a loop. So I kind of am curious about that, because in my mind, it's a directed acyclic graph. Right. It never loops back. Like things merge. Right. Or branch. But the loop back, I don't see in the signal processing. I guess that's how I think about it. And I may be myopically like over some finer narrowing or not understanding
something. I think the loop aspect is because there's multiple things at play affecting the sound, which is in a sense the end result that I'm focused on. I guess it's a conceptual loop is what I'm
exactly. Yeah. I think that's why it's pedantic
loop. Yeah.
Well, no, that's why it's pedantic. That's why I would say it's a pedantic argument, because in my mind, like, you could have a loop in there somewhere of like audio signal processing. And when I was trying to explain it to Jess, it was like, I was trying to take her step by step through it. And the thing that's difficult about step by stepping it is that there's points where there's like that intermingling in real time, right? Because even the sign language interpreter and Annie, so the sign language interpreter is seeing the words, Annie's seeing the words, but Annie doesn't have to say the words, right? She has that compositional license as they come up. So me, skip.
That's
lines.
Important to me when anything I write is that, you have a concept and you try to stay true to the concept, but sometimes the concept's boring. It makes the end result boring. So you got to add in a human element to mess things up a little bit. The bulk of the performance, I'd say maybe about 45 minutes, is pre-composed. There's a string quartet, and I can't have them just show up and improvise everything. I would rather have put the reins on a little bit. Again, I want to put reins on certain things.
There's such thing as a bad surprise. Yeah.
Bad surprise of music.
The strings are kind of left out of this process. And I think that's an element of when I was talking about chaos inserted into the purity of an idea, that's an example of it, where it's like, well, this isn't involved at all.
The show that happens on March 9th is the only time the show will happen that way. Because the nature of the machine learning model behind the scenes is such that the same lyrics wouldn't be generated every time, even with the exact same music played. So going to see that show is the only time that you get to experience it.
If I could seed a question real quick, because I don't feel like I've quite gotten this answer yet, and maybe you were getting there. In terms of what the AI is spitting out as text, are we seeing something that we would recognize as lyrics with a storyline, or is it more just sort of a feeling? And also, if you input the same notes at the same rhythm over and over again, does it generate the same thing, or is there a sort of randomness that's happening here?
It's a great question. What's actually coming out? And the answer is yes to the lyrical question. It comes out as what would be, we would perceive as lyrics as humans. However, those lyrics can be influenced by a prompt at the beginning, a prompt in the sense of machine learning prompts, but a prompt in the sense of literally in the code that we've written, you can direct it and say, is there a specific theme that you want the lyrics to be around? Is there a specific lyrical style that you want the lyrics to be in? So we've done some pretty funny stuff. I think in rehearsal the other day, the theme was feeling sweaty, you know, and we play with different lyrical modes like Dr. Seussian, Shakespearean, legalese. So you can actually direct the words in that sense. The answer to the second part of the question is, no, it's not deterministic, because the nature of the machine learning model behind the scenes is probabilistic. So the exact same notes played the exact same way will be contained within your theme and lyrical mode, but won't produce the same words.
Yeah, they'll produce words coming from the same place, like feeling wise.
Thematically.
Yeah, thematically, yeah. You'll have similar tropes, the prompt of I would say that I don't know if I've really noticed a narrative ever come through, because to have a narrative, you kind of have to have an end in mind.
Exactly.
Aaron's function in this performance is interesting, because he is like an instrumentalist in the ensemble. His instrument is his laptop. He shows up with it. He plugs into the system, and he is integral in the directions in which things are going and making it happen. It's not like the kind of thing where I could, you know, sit there, type in a few things, press go, and go play keyboard. You know, there's stuff happening. He's a performer along with everyone else.
I think that's so cool. We see a lot of overlap in the software community, right, in tech, of people who are musicians, you know, playing a lot of different instruments, like in the traditional sense, I'll say, and that are, you know, deeply inspired by and get a lot of energy out of kind of doing that same creativity in through their code, right? And they're both sort of this like orchestral directing some outcome that you're trying to work towards, right? Whether it's just the piece itself or an experience, you know, in a software program. And Dave, you're interesting because you're kind of on the flip side, where I think of you as like music dominant, but tech supportive or something, you know? And so I think that's just a cool dyad there that we see a lot.
It's the nature of collaboration is really based on trust in other people's ideas, providing a space for people to step up and to step back, and, you know, that having that kind of flow.
That's almost like you took a word out of our data ecosystem framework, Dave.
I know, Jess. Like, Jess and I were both smiling so big because you're literally talking about one of the key tenets to creating resilient community data and technology ecosystems, Dave. Like, you're literally like preaching from the Bible there of collaboration and trust. And what's fascinating about that is, like, you're so on point in so many ways, because, like, as a kind of validation of how trust is important in building community. So Steve Case basically has, you know, he was the American businessman and philanthropist, and he was the former CEO and chairman of American Online. Just that was used to be a like company.
I knew what AOL.
You knew AOL. Did you have an AOL account?
I did not. I wasn't cool enough. I had Juno. I think we established that earlier.
So. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to bring that back up. I didn't mean to rub salt in that wound. Old wound.
Okay. As an elder millennial, I just feel it important to call out that I too grew up with dial-up, had the quote computer room, and made and received mixtapes on real tapes, just like he did.
So Steve Case is, you know, has this initiative called Rise of the Rest. It's like a seed. It was a seed fund and road trip, and basically it was saying, let's look outside of Silicon Valley and New York City for innovation, right? Like, where do we go? And so they'd stopped in through Tulsa. So his crew, him and his team, came through Tulsa and, you know, and had a bit here. And I was talking to one of his team members about entrepreneurialism and innovation. I was like, how do you, like, okay, you're literally going all throughout the United States, you know, looking for innovators, thinking about entrepreneurialism, building community. Like, what's your takeaway? Like, what do we need to do differently in Tulsa to build better innovation and more fun and inspiring and evocative and organic community? And I'll never forget his answer. And his answer was, here's what you need to do. You need to get the technologists and the artists and the poets and the philosophers and the academics together. And it'll happen. Amazing things will just happen if you bring those groups together and let it organically emerge. And that's what I feel like this project is an exploration of. And I think that Dave, I feel humbled for you to say that I'm an instrumentalist, because to me, like, that music and the art part, it, to even be in the audience for it, to be a part of it at all, is an honor, because it's so amazing and inspirational.
Dave, do you have a name for that? Like, what's the show called? Or, you know?
It's called Music of the Senses. It's
cool.
Taking place at a Lowdown on March 9th at 8 p.m.
So, okay, so I've got a question. I want to go back to something. Dave, you talked about Aaron being an instrumentalist in his own right, and the instrument, right, is technology, specifically generative AI. Like, this is kind of the big piece that's driving a lot of the how the rest of the chain flows. So I'm curious, you know, and maybe Aaron, this is one for you to speak to, but the purpose, is it just a tool, a means to a specific end, or is this an element that brings in and has the potential for maybe a higher level of creativity?
Yeah, I'll like give my thought on that and love to hear kind of where your head's on is at on this, Dave. So when we first sat down and started to architect the like outline of this and the constraints in this, we had a really interesting discussion at Chimera. And we were saying, okay, so how will the model generate lyrics? Like, what's it trained on? And so we started at a more easy to access place. And we said, okay, well, you could do a machine learning model and you could train it on song styles and lyrics. So if Dave is playing something that sounds more country western, it might generate country western lyrics. If it sounds something more jazz, it might generate jazz lyrics, right? And so then you're just kind of really extracting the genre of music and then finding lyrics that match that. But from a technology perspective, that wasn't that difficult, and it wasn't as interesting a problem to solve.
The concerns around AI-generated art and music from an ethical, legal perspective, it's really, these concerns are multifaceted and complex, and they touch on issues of originality, copyright, the impact on traditional artists and musicians. You know, there's a debate on, from an originality perspective, whether AI-generated art and music can be considered original at all, given that these works are produced based on data and algorithms and existing information rather than any, I guess, raw human emotion or thought processes. It gets really interesting to think about this. You know, there's a concern about displacement of human artists. There's questions about bias and representation when you're leveraging the creation based on existing works. From a legal concern, you have copyright and ownership questions, you know, things like infringement or sampling. So AI systems trained on existing copyrighted works might produce content that is really similar to the training material, leading to potential copyright infringement issues. And then there's issues about licensing and royalties. Who is really, you know, who should be claiming ownership? Who should be compensated for the work that gets created? So there's a whole reevaluation of some of these existing ethical frameworks and how do you navigate them in the AI-driven world?
So we really did want to reach deeper in and say, is there a computational way to look at music? That's really the kind of the philosophical question that we were looking at. What's the computational perspective on music? And can a computational perspective on music generate something that feels creative to humans? Like, so you have to sideskip the question of if AI is creative or not. I mean, that's anthropomorphizing and gets into all sorts of other questions that we don't have answers to. But the more interesting question I thought was, can you computationally perceive music and then convert it into something that feels creative and emotional? And so that's what we tried to do. And that's why instead of training on styles like genres and then matching lyrics, you know, to genres, instead we reduced the composition down to the MIDI stream. And that MIDI stream is then what produces, gets translated into feeling and words.
I like the idea of, you know, it's got a very boogeyman kind of quality to the concept. And as any tool that has ever been invented by humans has always been greeted with fear, you know, that of the destruction of how we understand society to be. And I kind of, that concept is something that I've thought about a lot in my life. And it you know, you see it coming around and it's like, well, I don't know. Let's see what this boogeyman is, you know? So, you know, it's like, it's similar to like how a lot of professors I know are, you know, they will use ChatGPT so that they understand it, so that they know when they're getting papers written, you know, by, you know, just so that they can get used to the language. Cause there is a certain way. Right. Currently, I notice like a style in talking that it sounds, it's like when you talk to somebody that understands some things, but they don't really understand things. And I really enjoy that.
You're so right. I mean, the printing press, right? People were like destroying them because they were afraid of all kinds of things. Job loss. What is this going to mean for humanity? Too many people are going to have access to things that maybe others felt they shouldn't. And this is a very old experience.
Yeah. And I mean, and also I, you know, I see, I've had conversations with musicians, artists that I respect, you know, and there is a kind of looking down upon using AI because it's like, why don't we get machines to, you know, build bridges for us instead of making art? You know, I hear that argument a lot. And I get it. But I'm in a way I'm like, well, watch me. I can make something cool. it was in a way like a challenge, you know, to be like, okay, well, what do we got here? Well, is this going to be interesting or not? I don't know, but I'm not just going to dismiss it without engaging.
Thank you, Dave, for taking time out today to do this because it's just such a cool project. Yeah. And I could talk about it for hours with you.
There is an upcoming performance on March 9th. Music of the Senses at Lowdown in Tulsa, 8:00. To find out more, you could have a website, davidallenbroom.com. I have an Instagram that you can follow me on Brave Doom.